We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Sam, listeners, Light Years Podcast, do you ever feel like you're always on? What do you do when you need a moment to chill? How do you like to hit the reset button to get ready for what's next? There's only one beer out there that's literally made to chill, and that's Coors Light. The mountains on the bottles and cans even turn blue when your beer is cold. Wow, that's amazing. That way you always know when it's time to chill. When you need to hit reset, just open up a Coors Light. It's mountain cold refreshment and made to chill. Coors Light is the one I choose when I need to unwind. So when you want to hit reset, reach for the beer that's made to chill. Get Coors Light in the new look delivered straight to your door with Drizzly or Instacart. Coors Brewing Company, Golden, Colorado. And as always, celebrate.
What up, listener? We wanted to take a second to thank you for listening to this Blue Wire podcast. Be sure to show your support to this pod by subscribing and dropping a 5-star review on iTunes, a follow on Spotify, or the appropriate dApp for any other platform you might be listening on. And if you're enjoying this show, chances are you'll like one of our 75 other sports podcasts. Find more shows you'll love at BlueWirePods.com. Thanks again for listening, and now back to your regularly scheduled podcast.
Finally, it's my show. It's always been my show. He's just stealing attention.
So you let's reveal this then. So you started the coronavirus to get Andy off the show. It seems a little James Bond villain-esque of you, Sam.
But the more you think about it, the more it is on brand.
Facts, so, though. That's actually facts.
Now, Andy's gone for a couple weeks, pre-planned trip. And who am I here to go, dude? How are you going to miss the Warriors going to the Wizards in February?
How dare he? He doesn't think about this stuff.
So I got producer Ben Cruz on this week. For those who don't know, Ben is responsible for taking the worst quality audio recording I email him every week and trying to make it sound semi-passable.
Hey, you said it, not me, dude. So whatever, you know, I but at the same time, it's like getting to work with some of the best pieces of art that, you know, a painter could want to work with. So I appreciate you and Andy just giving me amazing content every week, just dying laughing as I'm editing in my hole in my house with my wife wondering what the hell I'm laughing at. So, no, I appreciate you guys.
So you're just letting the listeners know you like abstract art. So
I do, yeah. Super bougie.
Man, I before we get to the Warriors, let's talk through that Niner game real quick.
Oh, do we have to? Jesus. All right, we have to.
We don't need to go into it. I don't think our listeners want to, but where did you watch the game?
Watched it at my house, which was also a combined first birthday party for my daughter. So,
oh, wow. Happy birthday.
Yeah. Well, no, thank you. See, like we plan this like a month and a half out. So we were like, we sent the invites out. We're like, oh, let's just do it Super Bowl weekend, because like her birthday was actually like last week. My wife and I were working. So we're like, all right, this weekend seems to be free. Let's just do it. We're going to have people over for the Super Bowl anyway. Let's just do it. Fully, like only half expecting the Niners to be in it. Once they made the Super Bowl, I immediately regretted the decision, because I was like, my mind is going to be, honestly, 75% Niners, 25%, oh, this is my daughter's first birthday and probably the most important day of her life so far. Yeah. So it was, once everyone was over, it was fine. It was a struggle. Where did you end up watching it?
My friend throws a Super Bowl party every year.
Yep.
We watch it at his place every year. And, you know, it was really fun. And then it wasn't. So I don't think we need to rehash every detail of it. I'm sure there's 4,000 other podcasts, you know, shout out Striking Gold and Candlestick Chronicles on the Blue Wire Network if you want actual analysis of the game. But I will say this, I walked away from that less distraught than I felt when the Niners lost in 2013.
Oh, 1,000%. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And hear me out on this one. It's because they're young. Like, you never want to give away chances to win the title, but like, I almost felt similarly in 2016 with the Warriors, where I knew they'd be back. I knew they had, like, the A's are my baseball team. Every time the A's lose, I get an existential crisis, because I know they may just trade the whole team away.
Sure.
Right?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And the same thing goes when it's like a team that's maybe got a 31-year-old Patrick Willis and a 30-year-old Navarro Bowman, and you're watching that and you're like, dude, I don't know if they have it in them to make another run at this, right? With these Niners, I'm watching them and I'm like, you know, Kittle's what, 24, 25, Bosa's 22. I mean, they're just young across the board. It doesn't make it necessarily hurt less, but like, you know, it's not done, I guess, is the best way to put it.
No, I see what you're saying there. Like, foundationally, they do have more pieces kind of moving forward, where it's like there's a lot of room for improvement, and they honestly probably shouldn't have been here this quickly. Like, they went from 4-12 to the Super Bowl, which again is mostly unheard of, right? I think they're like the fourth or fifth team to ever do that. And their rebuild, if you will, was expedited by the fact that Jimmy G tore his ACL last year, and you know, they ended up having the second worst record, and then they get Bosa, and that kind of revamps their defense, a defense that was leaking.
Steph parallels, by the way.
Right.
Because, one, my main Niner takeaway from the Super Bowl was Nick Bosa's even better than advertised. And they just wouldn't get that guy if they had Jimmy last year. Like, even if they were, like, 6-10, they wouldn't get him, right?
Absolutely.
And that little step back may have been what they needed to be better over these next 5 years. Kind of like how Steph, you know, broke his hand on purpose to save the Warriors dynasty.
Yeah.
He's like, you know what? We're not good enough. We need another asset. Aaron Baines, break it.
Undercut me immediately. That's definitely what I see what you're saying. I like this. Nick Bosa, Steph Curry connections, man. I'm with it. I need this. Halfway through the
game. You got to come up with the positives. Like, I like to think of the positives and the negative scenarios. Maybe I'm just a hipster, because when things are going good, I'm the guy who's like, you guys are overrating this player. You guys are doing too much. But then when everyone's all sad, I'm like, hey, guys, it's not that bad.
Yeah, yeah. You know, it took me – I had to get into a nice place mentally after the game was over, because the party was still going on. So
right.
I like this positivity that you're going with, and I completely agree, mostly because I've been forcing myself to be in this space for the past like 24 hours. So I'm with it, man. Losses happen, you know? It's part of the game.
They'll be okay. No, we mentioned Steph. So the big news of the weekend is Steph will be reevaluated March 1st. He should be playing.
He looks good, man. Looks like he should be playing, yeah.
So we talked with a doctor on the premium podcast, which you guys should all subscribe to. And he kind of mentioned the hand injury does take over 4 months to heal. But it's one of those things where after 2 months, you can probably use it, and it's kind of a pain tolerance. It's your call about if you want to play through it. Full discretion, my dad broke his hand, the exact same bone that Steph did, a month before Steph did. So it was kind of, it's kind of funny. My dad fell and broke it in a weird way, and then Steph did it a month after. So I'm watching my dad go through this. He's still like, I can't grip things the same way. And while the hand's okay, it's still, it doesn't feel the same as it used to feel, you know, pre-breaking it. Which is to say, I think the Warriors, it's not so much they're manipulating it. They're doing the thing where if it was the playoffs, he'd play through the pain and they'd deal with the results.
Right.
But, you know, because maybe they don't have as many incentives to win, it's better to just let Steph fully heal it instead of, like, having him have some sort of deformed hand because they want to rush him back 10 games early.
Yeah, no, what's funny is I think the last time we potted together, the last time I filled in for Andy, I think was on Premium, and it was right when Steph broke his hand. And you and I had a conversation about, like, oh, how many games are they going to win by I think we the timeline that we set was, like, by the All-Star break, right?
Yeah, we kind of had the All-Star break as the...
just a checkpoint.
The unofficial, we think he'll be back.
Right, and I remember you said, I can't remember the win total that you projected. I think it was 10, I think. So right
now
around
we're
there.
At 11, baby.
Yeah, mine was 15.
12.
Yeah, mine was 15. So it's definitely going to fall right in the middle. At so that's I think that's super interesting. But yeah, man, I mean, watching Steph, like, just in warmups, just doing his regular routine, like, he could go. And, you know, I get it too. Like, you don't want to rush it back with, you know, I guess, you know, your franchise player, but, and like this,
particularly in a lost year, they're 12-39. What's Steph really going to do at this point?
Like, right.
Him coming back would be, I mean, I want to watch it because, you know, I can only watch so much Jacob Evans, so much, Damian Lee, and, you know,
Damian Lee, 5 threes tonight.
Look good. First good game since signing the contract.
Yeah.
Nothing yeah. funnier than him. He deserved that contract because he's an NBA player.
Right.
And then immediately goes into just a huge slump for 3 weeks. So I think we're going to probably get Steph sometime in early March. I would guess the 10th. You know, it could be the 15th, could be the 8th, something like that. And that puts him at about 20 games left on the season. My question for you is, what do you want to see from him over those final 20 games?
I mean, I want to see him. I think the first thing I want to see is just the initial contact, right? And just how he reacts to, because inevitably he's going to get hacked. He's going to take more falls like that, and you use your hands to break your falls, right? Will he have the confidence to kind of even do that from, like, a standing position to a ground position, like falling down? Obviously they're going to run him through, like, contact drills, you know, one-on-ones, three-on-threes, five-on-fives before they throw him
right
out there. But, you know, that in-game speed is just always a little bit different, right? It's like one and a half. It's like listening to a podcast at 1.5 times. So that is going to be the first thing I want to see. And then just his timing, just with, like, again, he's obviously the greatest shooter that's ever lived. But, you know, shooting an open gym for someone like him, that's probably he could have done it with one hand.
What does he really
speed.
Need his left for an open gym?
Right, exactly. So, you know, at full speed with defenders coming at him with the same, you know, attacking him the same way that they did before he broke his hand. You know, how confident is he gonna be? And then three, just the fit with D'Lo, right? Like, we got barely a taste of it at the beginning of the season, and then unfortunately it all went away. So I think those are the three things I'm looking forward to seeing, because, I mean, you're going to kind of need all of those things if they're going to be successful moving forward. So I think those are the three things I'm looking for when he comes back.
So two things there. I'm not necessarily as concerned about him playing through contact. I think he'll be fine with that regard. In terms of the shooting, this is what I want to say. So D'Lo's shooting 38% on 10 threes a game, which there's only one other player in the NBA who's doing that right now, and it's Damian Lillard. And he's shooting 39.5%, like, he's approaching 40%. it was a reminder to me. Steph shot 43.5% on 10 threes a game over the last 5 years.
Insane.
So you know how, like, Dame's been out of his mind recently?
Yes, absolutely.
And he's been amazing. But Dame is approaching 40%. I really think Dame's at his best when he's hitting the three-point shot. Like, it really opens up everything for him. And he's a really good shooter, but he's not Steph Curry. It's just a reminder of just how big an outlier Steph's shooting is. Like, we all, in our minds, can think of those games where he's, you know, 4-for-12 or missing shots and everything like that. But it's like he's just remarkably consistent on the highest degree of difficulty shots of anyone ever.
Yeah, and I mean, I miss that. You know, like watching the NBA this year, it's just so average, right? And you just yeah. And I think we took it for granted the past couple of years, right? All the, you know, 5 straight years in the finals, and you're just like, yeah, this dude's the greatest shooter ever. And you know, he has a rough stretch in the middle of January, and you're all of a sudden you're like, oh, come on, what's up with this dude? It's that classic, like, you don't know what you have till it's gone, right? He's gone.
And that's his whole thing. His rough stretch is 3 to 5 games.
Exactly.
Damian Lillard's probably going to hit a rough shooting stretch that lasts 20 games. And rough for him will be 34 to 35% from
right.
three, which is still good. But it's not, you know, I think over the last 6 games, Dame's been like 45, 47%. And like when you can do all the things he can, plus you're making almost half your threes, you're basically unguardable.
Yeah, Dame is bonkers right now. I mean, I know I miss Steph. I miss watching Steph. I love watching Dame right now. That dude is
best show in the NBA right now.
Easily.
I love what Giannis and Luka do, but they're a little more methodical, and it's not quite as it doesn't have the same level of flair. Maybe it's just a small guy thing. It's fun to watch the little guard just torch people.
Oh, yeah, for sure. And it's just like he can do it. Like Steph, there's just once he crosses half court, you're like, oh, he could pull and he could make it. So there's just something about that. It's just that type of player
it's
is exciting.
It's a defeatism when you're like, no, a guy's going to cross half court and you have to pay attention to him at the logo.
Right.
It really sucks if you're on the other side of it. And it's really amazing if you're just watching it. To your second point, D'Lo, that's kind of where I'm at too. The trade deadline's Thursday. That's going to be the main talking point the rest of the way this week. And we're getting some murmurings that maybe D'Lo will get traded. I did a little digging on this. I talked to some people and just kind of reading the tea leaves with other stuff. I still lean that it's less likely to happen than more likely. But the biggest reason I don't think it will happen at this point is I think they want to see what Steph and D'Lo and maybe with Clay looks like. Like, I think they need to be overwhelmed to not want to trade him before they see what they have. And I don't know that an overwhelming offer is going to come in.
No, yeah, totally. And they're kind of in the power position here, right? With D'Lo, there's no pressure for them to trade him on Thursday. Because again, one, they need to see how he fits with Steph and ideally Clay. But if you want to move on from D'Lo in the offseason, I mean, once you kind of know where your pick falls and kind of everything else, like that just kind of strengthens your position to be able to make a deal. So they're in absolutely no rush. And I, in terms of like a percentage of that trade happening, like, man, the T-Wolves would have to overwhelm them. And I just don't see the T-Wolves doing that given how, I mean, they've kind of ruin their own leverage, right? Just with the amount that they're out there saying they want
thirsty.
Him. Oh, so
they're,
thirsty.
They're definitely letting everyone know
yeah.
that they want D'Lo. And that's one approach.
it's an approach,
thing is,
yeah.
Yeah, the interesting thing is, like, it's kind of been reported from friend of the show, Ethan Strauss, that, you know, Towns might not be happy in Minnesota. I don't know that I need Ethan to report that. I don't necessarily find it surprising a guy that talented is unhappy being in a losing situation.
Sure, yeah.
But everyone knows Towns, Booker, and D'Lo are, it's kind of, you know, they're boys. They want to play together. D'Lo said as much, we're going to play together at some point. And you know, it's pretty obvious why they want D'Lo, beyond the fact that he's better than every one of their players except for Carl Anthony Towns.
Right.
So it's a talent upgrade. You know, trading for your best player's close friend is a good way to keep him from demanding a trade. So that's part of it. The other part, it's hard for me to not see the Warriors leaking some of this. I think the Warriors are trying to kind of see if someone's willing to give them the Godfather pick offer at this point. I think it's a Warrior leak, and I think the Warriors are trying to see, you know, is Minnesota willing to give us like four picks?
Are they willing to go
something crazy like that?
I like the theory more than any of these trade offers. So this is what I love about you, Sam, when you're like, I think it's this person leaking it. Like, no other person projects that stuff. And like, that's why I love editing this stuff. Cause I'm like, yeah, as I'm listening, obviously I'm looking for like stuff to take out or like keep in. And it's whenever you say that, like, I think it's this leak. I'm like, oh, I got it. This is fantastic. And I just had to put this was not planned for me to kind of pump you up like this, but I love it when you do that, man. I like this Warriors League. I like it.
Yeah. So I mean, let's take this a step back. The Warriors. Let's take it to Joe Lacob. Joe Lacob wants Giannis.
Yes,
he wants. Yeah, yeah. If not Giannis, he wants Joel Embiid. He wants. I don't know, Ben Simmons. Like he's a big game hunter. He's not looking for marginal moves. So I do think if they trade D'Lo, they're going to be looking at it more from an asset play. Like they would rather have a bunch of picks so that they can then trade it when the next disgruntled star wants to leave.
Right. Yeah. Pre-agency. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, it's we've seen it. Paul George got traded. And the Clippers wouldn't have been able to pull that off if they didn't trade Tobias Harris, and they didn't trade Blake Griffin to get Tobias Harris, and they didn't do all these moves to kind of give themselves this, you know, stockpile of assets to trade to a team who recognizes, okay, we're gonna have to go into rebuilding mode, so give us the most chips to rebuild with, and then, you know, so I think that's the most likely play, because I don't see, you know, D'Lo for Embiid straight up happening, or D'Lo for Embiid and, like, you know, the Warriors giving a couple picks, something like that. So I think the Warriors are only trading D'Lo if it's going to get them a bunch of picks or future assets or like players on rookie deals. Like what I'm getting at is I don't know that they have it in them to do a, like, the Monte for Bogut trade. Cause you know how like Bogut was like, he was kind of a marginal upgrade. Like, he's better than Monte.
Right.
He helped the Warriors more so. But, like, Bogut's not a flash signing, I guess is what I'm getting at.
Yeah, and they're also in a very different position now, right, than they were back then. Like, they know coming back next year if D'Lo's in the fold, like, at worst, right, he's there. He's the third guy. Like, they'll still be contending for the playoffs and possibly a championship because Steph and Clay and Draymond, like, that combination is just that good. So they're dealing from a position of, like, superpower, which is kind of scary to think about because, again, the front office, you know, they obviously haven't had to do a bunch of deals over the course of, you know, this championship run. But to look at them, you know, looking ahead basically to next year and kind of this lost year and thinking, like, we're cool if we can check, right? Like, we don't have to raise anything. The fact that they have that power is kind of scary to think about, I guess, for the rest of the league. Not, you know, it's awesome for us to think about because that's going to be fun to watch. But, man, like, I would love to just sit in on these trade calls and Bob Myers just sitting back, his feet are just kicked up, and he's like, you know, wow me, basically, with an offer, and no one can do it.
So the flip side to it would be, what if Minnesota makes a different deal? Minnesota's clearly looking to add talent. What if they trade for, I don't even know who off the top of my head, but what if they get another point guard? All of a sudden, the number one team who's interested in D'Lo is no longer on the market. What if that kills the Warriors' leverage to trade him? So I think it goes both ways.
Yeah.
I think they, like, you can say play the long game, but.
But even, like, so let's say Minnesota does that, right? Like, they trade for another point guard and the Warriors are, quote unquote, stuck with D'Angelo.
Right.
That's necessarily not the worst position to be in. Like, you know, you go into next season with Steph, Clay, Draymond, and D'Lo. I mean, that's what they were kind of going into this year with, and they would have been a playoff team if everything, you know, if all these injuries didn't shake out the way that they did. So, I mean, that's not necessarily the worst position to be in. And I think, I forgot where I read this, but it, I think the Knicks would be potentially, like, they obviously don't have the pieces that the Timberwolves have to offer, but the Knicks could still be in play if they were like, oh, we got to get a freaking point guard in here because we have 9,000 power forwards. So it's there's
the,
other
the flip
people.
Side is the Warriors have 9,000 power forwards.
That is true.
Generally, building the power forward roster is not a. I mean, it's definitely outside the box. Not the move, though. Yeah, no, I saw the Knicks in there, and I just don't know that they have anything that the Warriors would want unless they're stupid enough to give the Warriors like unprotected picks.
Right. And they're not that far above the Warriors currently in that in those lottery ball standings. I think I read it. It was like it would be a package of like Bobby Portis and Neal Akina. And I was like, nah, that doesn't do
yeah,
anything for me.
Yeah, it's not doing it for me.
Yeah, that's kind of garbage. But, you know, what do I know?
So I don't know. We'll see. I still stand by my theory. I don't know that the Warriors are trading D'Lo if they aren't getting either a couple promising young players or a couple picks. It's going to be something like that where even if you don't think it makes sense in context of the Steph, Clay, Draymond contention window, it does make sense in terms of arming the Warriors with these tools to acquire the players that they really want to arm the roster around those guys. The other thing is Mark Stein reported Alec Burks, Glenn Robinson III available. I mean, I think everyone knows basically everyone outside the Warriors core three is available. And maybe Draymond would be available if the right package came, but I don't think that's really in the cards. How do you feel about that? How do you feel about Alec Burks and Glenn Robinson in general?
I actually like, I always kind of try to think about these, looking at them now, it's kind of like they're kind of playing out of their roles in terms of like where they actually should be, right? So Alec Burks, I like. I would have liked him if he was that guy coming off the bench to kind of carry that second unit for a little bit to give Steph a breather. I do think he's, between him and GR3, I do think he's the most likely to be traded by Thursday, simply because he's kind of, even if he plays out this whole year, like he's not coming back, right? He's kind of outpriced himself to the Warriors. Whereas I think Glenn Robinson, I do think everything. So I listened, everything that Anthony Slater has said about GR3 is that he loves Steve Kerr. He loves the system. He kind of loves being with this team. So I do think that he's a bigger candidate to come back.
The system perfect.
Absolutely.
They like specific types of players, and it's hard to find wings who can kind of do a little bit of everything and are comfortable functioning in that role. I still wouldn't be surprised if they traded him, but I'm with you. I think if they trade him, they're going to do everything they can to get him back in the summer either way.
Yeah. Like, cause I don't think he wouldn't be that expensive, right? Cause obviously with the cap stuff, like no team, I mean, I guess, you know, the Hawks could blow their load and you know, sure, throw him a shit ton of money, but like, why would they do that? And he's obviously found a role. So, I mean, why not stick around to play with Steph, Clay, and Draymond, and you know, potentially D'Lo, and, you know, up your value even more? Like, it just kind of makes the most sense for him to kind of stick around, and like a fit-wise, like you said.
The interesting thing is because everyone wants two-way wings. Yep. Now, I'm not saying Glenn Robinson's, you know, some shutdown defender or some, you know, amazing shooter, but he's above average at both.
Yes.
And when you start running down the list of 6-7 wings who can at least play a team defensive scheme and hit open threes and do a little more, the list gets really short. So I do wonder what his free agency will be like. He's kind of had an interesting career where he was promising, or he was raw, then he showed promise, then he had a couple bad injuries that really set him back. And he's kind of resurrected himself with the Warriors, and I kind of forget this. He turned 26 a couple weeks ago. He's not old.
He's super young. And he's, again, type of dude who you bring him off the bench. You know, again, he doesn't have to play.
Or you start him.
Yeah.
Next to the better players. But, yeah, I mean, I could see Glenn Robinson III playing in a playoff rotation because he does enough things well enough to make that. Like, he's clearly better than, you know, Alfonso McKinney or even, like, Swaggy P. Like, he could
How
play.
Dare you? We don't know that for a fact, okay?
All I'm saying is I watched the Warriors go out there with, like, Jonas Torebko and Quinn Cook in game 6 of the finals last year, and I'm watching Glenn Robinson III, and I'm being like, you know what, he could have played in the finals last year.
Him and Damian Lee would have looked real good against the Raptors in game 6 of the finals, which is strange to say, but here we are.
Yeah, right?
Sorry, Sam. I'm going to cut you off real quick because now seems like a great time to talk about our friends over at Bet Online. Did you miss your chance to bet on the Chiefs and Niners in yesterday's Super Bowl? Fear not, dear listener. Blue Wire is excited to be partnering with Bet Online to help you win big, no matter the time of year. With March Madness, the Masters, and Major League Opening Day right around the corner, Bet Online has you covered for all your latest news, scores, and odds. It's the best way to place your bets, and it's free to sign up. Plus, it's never too early to lay down your future bet for Super Bowl 2021. Give me the frickin' Chiefs-Niners rematch. Head over to betonline.ag and use our promo code BLUEWIRE to receive your 50% welcome bonus on your first deposit. We signed up and it's super easy, and if you're already making wagers, it's a fantastic way to support this podcast. Again, that's promo code BLUEWIRE, all one word, BLUEWIRE, when you sign up at betonline.ag. Bring your best bets home with BetOnline, your online sportsbook experts.
Let's move this forward. We have some mailbag questions.
Oh, we absolutely do. So I'll start you off with one from the email question mailbag. Someone who is we've got Varun Bhagat. Like many listeners, I was emotionally destroyed by the Super Bowl. Very strong verbiage there. I need unbridled blog boy optimism from you tonight. Can you map out the best case realistic scenario for the Dubs to return to title contention next year? One scenario involving retaining D'Lo and one involving a trade of him, which is a great segue from what we were just talking about.
Okay, so keeping D'Lo, it looks like this. They have Steph, D'Lo, Clay, Draymond. They're going to keep Pascal, Glenn Robinson III. They're going to use the mid-level. They're going to acquire Andre Iguodala. So now we're up to 7 players. Andre will play kind of a reduced role relative to what he did during the dynasty run.
Sure.
They're going to use the traded player exception to acquire a center to go in there. Maybe, I don't know, maybe like Kelly Olynyk or someone like that. They obviously still have Looney to close lineups, so now we're up to 9-10 players. And they still have their first-round pick, but they can make him a developmental project, not necessarily a guy who needs to be a key first 8 guy in the rotation for the playoffs. In my opinion, if they keep D'Lo, they're a 50-plus win team without even having to try, because D'Lo will raise the floor. We can all argue about how Steph, D'Lo, and Clay together, like, how does that match up with the Clippers? But you know who you play in the regular season a lot more often? The Sacramento Kings. The Phoenix Suns. All these teams where they can rack up wins. Like, I think the D'Lo thing allows them to stagger and have 48 minutes of all-star point guard play you know, majority of those being Steph Curry, who's a superstar. And it puts him in this position to be a 55-61 team. And I still don't know how they defend at a high enough level with Steph and D'Lo on the floor at the same time in the deeper rounds of the playoffs, but that's still a contender.
Okay, I like that. And so, kind of going to the other part of his question, map that out with D'Lo not on the team.
Okay, so if D'Lo's not on the team, that means they traded him at the trade deadline. And I'm going to assume that's Minnesota. So they get Robert Covington, who's an elite wing defender.
Yep.
And they get a bunch of picks. Let's just say a couple picks. They then package those picks along with their first-round pick. Now they're an interesting destination for the next disgruntled superstar. I don't know who that will be. Maybe Philly has a terrible playoff run and they make a decision. We got to trade Ben or Joel.
It's
not a good market for disgruntled stars, but all of a sudden they have these chips. Maybe they decide they don't want to go for the disgruntled star. Maybe they decide they want to go for someone like Miles Turner, who is in a weird situation in Indiana where they have Sabonis, who's an all-star, and Turner, who are both centers. And the Warriors come around and go like, you know what? We'll give you a couple picks for that guy. You get rid of him. Now all of a sudden they have Miles Turner. I think that's the path. If they trade D'Lo.
Wow, all right. I like both. Both sound good. All right, let's dive more into the mailbag here. So you mentioned Iguodala earlier. We have actually an Iguodala-related question. If Iguodala is offered $3.5 to $4 million by a playoff team next year, do you think he still comes back to the Warriors for the minimum, or would they have to dip into the mid-level?
So vet min for him would be about 2.3,
right.
2.5,
yep.
2.6, something like that. So you're saying, do they...
Does he come back to the Warriors for that? Right, exactly.
I mean, he already did it once with Sacramento. Sacramento offered him $48 to $50 million over 2 years, and he stayed with the Warriors for $48 over three. Hard to say. I actually don't know that he'll have those offers in the offseason. Given the way everything's breaking out with Memphis, it's not a good look for Andre. He's depressing his own market.
I think I actually just saw that Ja Morant is really pushing for this dude to get traded. Ja's not happy. I think I just got that alert from Bleacher Report. So
I saw the Dylan Brooks quote. We got a Dylan
Brooks
quote. Oh,
yeah. So I think it was him and Ja. So already two disgruntled current teammates, as weird as that sounds, for Iguodala. So, let's dive into one more. This is probably my favorite question of the mailbag. Did Andy ruin the Niners' brief dynasty as
yes.
well?
Everything is Andy's fault. All good things are me. All bad things are Andy.
There you go. I'm filling in for him. So, you know, I appreciate everything that you do, Andy, wherever you are right now.
Let's see. We got a couple other good ones here. How do you feel about Smiley Geach being tall Alex Caruso from my friend Kirk Henderson?
Tall Alex Caruso.
Do you think, okay, so he texted me this. He kind of alluded to the fact that, like, so Laker fans kind of make the Caruso's kind of a caricature, right?
Sure.
He's actually a decent player. He definitely is an NBA player, right? And Warrior fans seem to really like Smiley Geach. I don't think it's reached that level yet with him. Smiley's he's a little bit of a project. He's interesting, but I don't think it's reaching Bleacher Report aggregating everything he does five times a day.
I could kind of see it from the perspective of, like, if he does something, NBC Sports Bay Area will kind of pull the Bleacher Report True. Move and pull his stuff and kind of highlight him in that sense. But it's nowhere near Alex Caruso levels. Those are, like, this Alex Caruso finished freaking, like, fourth in all-star guard voting for the West. So
that's true.
You know, like, Smiley, The casual NBA fan doesn't know who he is. Yeah. So there's more people out there who know who Alex Caruso is somehow than Smiley Geach. Like, that's not even close.
Let me ask you this question. If the Warriors were the Warriors of the last couple of years, would Smiley Geach get national aggregation Caruso attention?
I just don't think he plays enough. I mean, I would like to think that he would, because again, they're under a more, or they're under a bigger spotlight.
Right.
But you know, someone who's kind of going between Santa Cruz and Oakland, I just don't think he gets that. I think the Warriors kind of like shut that down almost. The Lakers are trying to just build that goodwill back up that they kind of lost over the past couple of seasons. So they're like, hey, you want to talk about Alex Caruso? Go ahead. You know? So I don't think the Smiley thing would have reached. I think, well, like Warriors smart marks would have been like all over that, right? But I don't think I don't think nationally it would have reached the Caruso levels. That's a good question, though. I like that.
I'm with you there. I like this one from Brando. Brando Starkey from the Undefeated, or Starkey, sorry. It just inserted the letter L into his name for no reason. But I do that. Answer me this. What pieces would you have to put around Steph, Clay, Draymond, and D'Lo for them to be a championship contender?
Man, I think it's just, I think it's like, it's a rim runner center, kind of like they kind of have one already in Marquise Chris, and then just literally a bunch of GR3s, it's obviously they have like one of them, but that's really it, right? It's like a rim runner center and people who can spread the floor and play some decent defense. I don't think that formula has changed all that much from the past couple of seasons. Obviously Durant was a huge piece, but that's the kind of, they always surrounded their core, or they tried to at least, or that they wanted to,
sure,
with those kind of pieces, with, you know, JaVale McGee's, you know, Alphonso McKinney's, who obviously he didn't pan out as well, but it's just those type of guys that I think with the kind of the gravity that Steph and Clay provide and everything that Draymond can do, you just got to fill in those gaps, you know? So I think those are the ideal pieces around those four.
Yeah. I feel like, the one thing that everyone undersells if D'Lo does come back is, you know how like we watch Houston and they will, you know, they have Harden and Westbrook, and before Westbrook goes Chris Paul, they start together, but then one of them is always on the floor at all times of the game.
Right.
And it's so annoying when you have your backups in there, but the other team has Russell Westbrook or Chris Paul, and you're like, dude, this guy's too good to play against the backups.
Right.
That's something the Warriors could have if D'Lo was still here. Like, it's really hard to compete with the fact that like the other team has, let's just say the Lakers, for example, they have Rondo and like Jared Dudley and, you know, like kind of a hodgepodge of like solidish bench players.
Alex, right? Caruso, who we just talked
And the other team has either Steph Curry or D'Angelo Russell just cooking. It leads you to a lot of wins. Honestly, the biggest thing people missed with the Spurs being as good as they were the second half of the dynasty run of theirs was they were deep. They beat teams with the bench. Like,
right,
their starters would play you even, but then you knew their bench was going to increase. Their bench was going to get like a 5 to 7 point advantage on your bench at all times. And that adds up really quick, you know, because they'd have Manu coming in, but you don't have Manu on your bench. It just leads to like this in the game, you know, I mean, the possessions in the second quarter are just as valuable as the possessions in the first or the third. So it leads to your ability to just win more games. It doesn't change the fact that like at the end of a game, either D'Lo or Steph has to guard Paul George. And I don't know how that works. But like I said, you don't play the Clippers 82 times.
Right. You can kind of figure that out when you have to, but everyone else, I mean, we can see it this year, right? Just kind of West standings.
I think the best way to put it is it raises the floor, but the fact that you don't know how those four play together in like crunch time minutes, it might lower the ceiling. But hey, you know, you can't have a perfect team. We had a perfect team for 3 years.
Yeah.
Sometimes reality hits.
Yeah, yeah.
So last topic of the show. Our friend Andre Iguodala is taking player empowerment to the next level with his just outright refusal to play but collecting his checks and just trying to dictate where he gets traded. How do you feel about this, Ben?
Man, I feel like my opinion of this is probably slanted because I'm a huge Iguodala guy. Like, I think he could do no wrong. And then he started doing this. So, in terms, I think it's messed up in the sense that, look, he's getting paid a lot of money. I understand you don't want to live in Memphis. I understand you might not want to play in Memphis. But
I don't know, man. We live in the Bay Area. I could do with some Memphis housing prices.
Well, that too. I mean, well, he might not want to move, right? Or like pick up a new crib just for whatever 6 months. Like that is annoying.
At this point,
get that.
2 months.
Yeah, like, and no, I also understand it from the fact of like I'm in my 30s too. Like, I wouldn't want to move somewhere for 6 months to do my job. Like, I get it from that perspective. I also think like he's getting paid a shit ton of money to play basketball and like go do your thing, like, and there's a very high chance, even if he was playing, that he would be traded anyway. So I don't know, like, this, the player empowerment stuff, like, I'm all for it. Like, I'm very pro player empowerment just generally. This, I think, takes it to an extreme that I don't necessarily agree with. So I mean, hopefully it's coming to some sort of resolution, but man, it's not a good look for my guy. Let's just to kind of steal a quote from Binge Mode. It's not a great look for Iguodala.
I'm with you on that. To me, I think the problem is the league. I think this is on Adam Silver.
Sure. Yeah.
I just can't see this happening with David Stern being in charge. And like, okay, David Stern's a little tyrannical, but sometimes you need the Vince McMahon. Sometimes you need someone to get on the mic and tell you you're fired.
Exactly.
You don't do it.
I appreciate that reference, by the way. I appreciate all your wrestling references.
I had to weave in. You know, my wrestling knowledge is more tied to the Attitude Era. I'm not a constant consumer of the WWE anymore.
That's fair. That's where we grew. That's where my fandom like exploded. Yeah. I just haven't been able to shake it. It's like a drug habit at this point, where I'm like, I just accept it. It's part of my life. And every, like, my family and friends just have to accept it as well. So, and I got a podcast out of it. So what are you going to do?
Yeah. I mean, you're willing to pod during Monday Night Raw. I really appreciate that.
I watched the East Coast feed, if I'm being fully honest. So I already watched it.
No wonder you wanted to record after 8.
Yeah. I was way ahead of you.
I think it's ultimately bad for the league that he's able to do it. But like, here's where I come down. Andre's just using his leverage. If I was in his position, I would push my leverage as far as I could.
Right.
And he's only able to push it because no one's telling him no. Like, we all have jobs. We all have done contract negotiations in some form or another. You push it as far as you can because you can, because you want to make more money, because you want to dictate your own outcome. Whether it's financial or comfort, or, you know, I want to work from home 3 days a week and I will not take this job unless you give it to me. And if they're willing to give it to you, you're like, oh, that's pretty cool. Right.
Yeah. I mean,
so
you,
I think the issue is no one's, it's just strange that he has a fully guaranteed contract and no one's making him actually honor it. And that to me falls above him. Because quite frankly, if someone was willing to give me $16 million and I was able to tell them, nah, not coming in today, I'd probably do it too.
Absolutely. Anyone who's like, I can sit high and mighty and say, hey, you know, he should play, he should do this. And like, there are a lot of people who are saying that too, but everyone else would do the exact same thing. If, again, it's super weird that no one's like, yo, you have to go in, man. Like, you have to practice. At least you have to do something. Like, he's literally gallivanting around the Bay Area still.
Pull your hamstring and stretch it for 4 weeks.
Right.
I don't know, something like that.
Like, fake an injury. Like, you know, come here for a game and, like, twist your ankle, like if you don't want to play. But man, hey, props to, this is why the Warriors needed him during this championship run. He just thought the game way ahead of everyone else. So mad respect to the champ.
I'm just, so the Grizzly players have finally started saying stuff. Dylan Brooks sent a tweet. Let me pull it up now. Dylan Brooks, I can't wait till we find a way to trade him so we can play him and show him what Memphis is really all about. And then Ja Morant retweeted that, and a few of the players like Jay Crowder and all them, I mean, they got into it. And I get it. Those guys are fighting for the 8 seed. They're a good team. They're really good, actually. And it's a little disrespectful that he doesn't even want to be a part of their team. Like, I would feel disrespected if I was a Memphis player.
Two things on that. Like, one, I at least would have come back for their throwback jersey nights, because those were, I actually like those jerseys. I think they're incredible. Two, it's just funny that since they brought those jerseys back, he went full Stevie franchise on them. It was like, I'm not playing for the Grizzlies. So it's just funny how things come full circle. You know, maybe this is a way of paying homage to Steve Francis. We don't know. We should. Someone's got to get who does Blue Wire's Grizzlies pod. They got to get Iguodala on and figure this all out.
I mean, when I think of the Grizzlies, I think of Big Country Reeves.
Absolutely,
number one, who was meant to be a pro wrestler, not an NBA player.
Man, they missed a, that was a big missed opportunity. I lived in Canada actually when the Raptors and Grizzlies became teams. and it was incredible. Obviously the Grizzlies didn't survive out there in Vancouver.
Was there a big country hive in Vancouver?
Just
resonated with the Vancouverans or Vancouveronians?
I mean, it was a long time ago. Like, I was like 8 years old when this happened. But he was, in terms of like Canadian celebrities, he was definitely up there just because he was a big, tall, white dude. Canadians love them some big, tall white dudes. So he looks
like a Mountie.
Absolutely. He could be confused for a Mountie easily. So he unfortunately didn't, you know, his career kind of petered out after a few years. But you know, he made some money. He made some Canadian dollars and took it to the bank,
which are 3/4 of a dollar.
Exactly.
Say he that's enough Big Country Reeves talk on the podcast.
Yeah, we'll say that again. We'll say that for the Grizzlies the Grizzlies pod here.
Instead
on Blue
of the
Wire
premium feed, subscribe.
Yeah, guys. And yeah, there you go.
Okay, we'll get out of here on that. I guess next pod we will know if D'Lo stays or goes. I want to let's end with this gun to your head. Is D'Lo a Warrior on Friday?
Yes.
Okay, you feel very... So, then let me take another set. What percentage chance do you think it is he gets traded? You think he's clearly going to be a Warrior. You're saying it's like 20% he's traded?
Thursday? I'm going 15. And okay. I'm sticking with 15 because the last time you asked me to predict something, I predicted 15 wins for the Warriors at the All-Star break. I'm going 15%. For D'Lo being traded by Thursday. I'm just sticking with my brand. I like the number 15. Damn it, that's Patrick Mahomes' number. I hate 15.
I'll go with I'm gonna go with 20%.
Okay.
So basically I think just a little more, but I don't think he'll be traded.
I mean, like you said, there is a possibility, and as it gets closer, that someone's going to shoot them the Godfather offer, and they're going to have to pull the trigger. Like, there is that opportunity for someone to do that. And as you kind of read all these trade deadline articles, there one running theme is, like, teams get more and more desperate as the deadline comes up. So you
and they put false info out there to try to make opposing teams more desperate.
Exactly.
I think that's my favorite part of the deadline. The more social media, the more media exists, the more misinformation goes out there, and like teams want that. Like, I mean, I think Bob has a burner. I think Bob's feeding accounts information, being like, yeah, the Wolves offered us 3 picks, but we're not we're not settling for less than 4. And the next thing you know, it's on Bleacher Report tomorrow.
Yeah, and then they're going to have 4 first round picks just to build around Steph. So we can never
Steph,
underestimate
Steph and a bunch of teenagers.
Yeah, and I guess that's to your point. We can never underestimate the swindle god. So that's the extra 5%. I like that.
There we go. 5% for the swindle god. That's the pod.